Inside Florida Politics, powered by Kate House Florida. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always by Gatehouse Capitol correspondent John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hey, Zach.
Well, we're deep into the dog days of summer here in Florida politics. Congress is on recess, and there's not much happening in the halls of the state capitol in Tallahassee either. But we've scraped together a few tidbits of political news to chew over this week, starting with the cancellation of a controversial immigration listening tour that some GOP lawmakers were planning to kick off later this month. We'll talk about that and the discussion in Florida surrounding white nationalism and gun laws in the wake of the recent shootings. But first, y'all know what that music means. John Kennedy, have you come prepared with a number?
Zach, you know, I've been coming in with some pretty small numbers lately. Sure, I may add a decimal place to look them, just make them look a little bit more robust. But this week I found one of the biggest ones in a while. 867.7 million. How do you like that?
You're going to have to repeat that again, John. 800 and what? 867?
867.7.
Wow. George Bennett would say that is a heck of a curve buster there. And I thought I had a big number at 5 million, but John has me beat this week. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll come back to them at the end of the show and tell you what they mean for Florida politics. Well, the fallout from the recent mass shootings continues to impact the state of Florida here and our political climate. The deaths of 22 people at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, has refocused attention on the gun debate and on the immigration debate as well. The gunman said he was targeting Mexicans and responding to, quote, the Hispanic invasion of Texas. Florida's immigration debate has been white hot in recent months after GOP lawmakers pushed through a controversial sanctuary city bill this year. They're hoping to follow up next year with another effort to crack down on illegal immigration, and they had scheduled an immigration listening tour to get ideas from the public. But the tour was sharply criticized after the El Paso shooting, with critics saying it mostly was scheduled for predominantly white communities that don't have many immigrants. State Senator Joe Gruters, a Sarasota Republican who also chairs the Florida GOP and is a close ally of President Donald Trump, said this week that he is postponing the immigration listening tour to try and let things cool down after El Paso. John, do you think that was a smart move by Gruters?
Well, I do think it was probably smart of Gruters to postpone the tour. You know, just after the shooting in El Paso, the issue has gotten so inflamed. Remarkably, it's been mostly rhetoric by Republicans from the White House on down that has added fuel to this immigration fire. But I'm thinking, Gruters will revive this tour. At least he said he plans to. He mostly was going to go to Republican-friendly areas, as you pointed out, was the initial plan. But the Republicans have found that cracking down on immigration seems to be an issue that plays fairly well with voters, that a lot of independent and moderate voters, some of whom may, generally not like Trump, but that they still worry about immigration. When the Democratic presidential candidates mostly agree on the issue of decriminalizing those who illegally cross the border, instead making it just a civil offense, Trump and Republicans think that these candidates are really turning off voters that both parties, need for the 2020 election. A survey just this week by Rasmussen reports that found that 73% of likely American voters consider illegal immigration a serious problem in this country, and 47% said it's very serious. So, and that's considered the highest level of concern that Rasmussen has found in 4 years of asking the question. And by contrast, only 25% in that survey disagreed and thought that illegal immigration is not that serious. So for Gruters, this kind of tour, touting the Republican-led legislature's action on banning so-called sanctuary cities and requiring local officials to help enforce federal immigration law, that may be something that's good for the president's reelection prospects in this state.
Yeah, I do think that Republicans think that they have an advantage on immigration here. And they think that the Democrats are moving too far to the left on this issue. But I think postponing the tour was probably a smart move by Gruters, though. You know, this is would have probably become a big political spectacle. You can even argue that it's somewhat unseemly to make a big show of pushing these immigration proposals so soon after this, you know, racially motivated mass shooting. I don't think postponing the tour is going to lessen the passions surrounding this issue very much, though. You know, I wrote a few months ago before the Sanctuary City bill passed that this debate had really reached a fever pitch. And I don't know what is beyond a fever pitch, but I think that it is reaching a whole new level right now after this shooting. You know, you've had hundreds of immigrant rights groups flooding the state during the Sanctuary City bill, hundreds of advocates, dozens of groups. And I guarantee you that critics are going to of this GOP immigration approach are really going to keep the pressure on, and that this El Paso shooting has only given them more motivation to try and push back against some of these measures. And one reason that passions are so high surrounding this immigration issue is that many are concerned that there's a very dangerous undercurrent that has encouraged violence, really, with this latest shooting. We saw that we saw another incident just this week that a Florida man was arrested for threatening to shoot up a Walmart. I think it was he made this threat a day after the El Paso shooting. According to the Winter Park Police report, the man who was arrested, 26-year-old Richard Dean Clayton, wrote on Facebook that, quote, three more days of probation, then I get my AR-15 back. Don't go to Walmart next week. The police report says that Clayton asked the arresting officer, quote, are you Hispanic? They are what is wrong with this country. They come in and are ruining everything. The police report also says that the Facebook page associated with Clayton had multiple posts that, quote, are racist in nature, including a swastika. One post reads, quote, imagine for a moment that we've established out ethnostate. That's a typo. It should be our ethnostate, which means a white state. Physically removed all the commies and degenerates, and white birth rates are back in the positives. John, this guy seems to be a white nationalist, white supremacist, whatever you want to call it. He's talking about shooting up a Walmart. We spoke last week about the reaction here in Florida to these mass shootings, and one reaction was from State Senate President Bill Galvano, who tasked a Senate committee with investigating the causes of these shootings, including white nationalism. This would seem to be more evidence for this type of investigation. What do you expect from this Senate committee?
Yeah, it certainly does. This has been, you know, kind of a subterranean movement around the state that periodically flares up, I guess, like this example in Winter Park. But Galvano wants the Senate to consider the rise of white nationalism when it begins committee meetings next month, and kind of explore very, very holistically, very, very generally, I guess, at this point, what steps may be needed in Florida to respond to these most recent mass shootings. You know, earlier this year, the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism published a report that found extremist groups in Florida had accounted for 197 incidents, including 5 murders, 5 terrorist plots, and 1 police shootout. And probably no surprise, most of these incidents involved right-wing extremist groups. And one of them was the 2018, that shooting at a yoga studio in Tallahassee. That was connected to the misogynistic incel manosphere movement, as it's called. 2 women were killed in that attack, and that was just about 3 miles from the state capitol.
That was a guy who basically just hated women, right?
Yeah. And that's a whole, you know, another sector of hate groups that are out there. So I guess Galvano was trying to say, you know, how do you interrupt this rise? I think some of the discussion among legislators may involve trying to have the Florida Department of Law Enforcement beef up its Office of Domestic Security, maybe to include an enhanced focus on some of these extremist groups. Maybe it's time to put these kind of organizations on the same level as the watchfulness, I guess, that FDLE has had toward defending against, other acts of terrorism.
Right. And people have been saying that the FBI should be more focused on domestic terrorism, that it's really been focused more on, international, Islamic-based terrorism. since 9/11, and that, you know, maybe there's more of a threat now from domestic terrorism. It sounds like maybe people would be suggesting the same thing for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, potentially.
Yeah, that maybe that's a role that they can somehow play. Now, of course, you know, all these agencies, it involves a lot of interaction with, you know, FBI, Justice Department, you know, everybody else that's involved in this as well. So, but, you know, I think there may be some talk of trying to add, you know, another task to FDLE, and that would involve, you know, maybe more money, a new division, whatever it may involve. But I think in Galvano's world, I think there's some room for improvement there.
It's going to be a fascinating debate, and I'm sure you'll be watching that committee when it starts to meet in Tallahassee in the coming months. When it comes to white nationalism, it's also worth noting there was a bill filed this week by a Democratic state house member from Orlando, Representative Anna Eskamani, that calls on lawmakers to formally condemn white nationalism and white supremacy. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. Well, the issue of racism and white nationalism is one thing that makes the recent shooting in El Paso different from other shootings. But in other ways, the El Paso shooting and a mass shooting in Dayton, Ohio on the same weekend are very similar to past mass shootings. And in both instances, you have troubled young men using high-powered weapons. So again, we're seeing some similar reactions from people who are concerned about restricting these type of weapons, or at least ensuring that troubled people can't get a hold of them. One of the big issues that everyone is discussing right now are red flag laws, which allow authorities to seize weapons from people who are believed to be dangerous. John, Florida lawmakers already have passed red flag legislation, but could it be revisited next year?
Yeah, I think that's another one that's going to come up pretty quickly here in September when the Senate committees begin their work. The red flag law in Florida was enacted after the Parkland shooting last year at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. It allows law enforcement to ask a judge to remove firearms from the home of people that they think, that they believe are a threat, either to themselves or to the community. Now, Senator Lori Berman, a Palm Beach County Democrat, she's already introduced legislation that would expand this to allow family members of the troubled person to ask the judge to take away weapons. Now, last year, the legislature didn't want to allow family members to get involved. This was discussed, but it was kind of quickly rejected amid claims by...
I mean,
why is that? Well, the Republican leadership, and this sounds potentially like it's echoing some talking points from the National Rifle Association, maybe, but they had at the time said that they feared that such demands could get involved in, you know, domestic or divorce cases. The common claim being that a vindictive wife would seek to have an estranged husband's guns removed just out of spite. But the legislation now before lawmakers that would allow close family members, including spouses, to seek a petition to take guns away. And just as we mentioned in last week's podcast, that more than 1,700 such risk protection orders have already been issued statewide since they went on the books last year. So they are being used by law enforcement, and maybe they are a step in the right direction.
And the argument for having close family members be able to petition the court directly is that I think right now you have to go through a law enforcement agency and they have to petition the court, you know, so that there's an extra step here that maybe this would be quicker, and that it's these family members who are really have more intimate knowledge of the issues that their family members might have.
Sure. Yeah. And oftentimes, you know, they involve threats against other family members, presumably. So there is kind of a direct connection, you know, within the home to people that it may be a danger either to themselves or to the community. So I think that's part of the thinking, but we'll see where these go. I mean, every one of these has a cadre of gun rights supporters that say that there are problems with them, that it's going to force some kind of registration to be created, and right. Also impact Second Amendment rights. So this legislature is very reluctant to do anything that hurts gun rights.
Yeah, and I know some people have argued that it infringes on people's due process as well, and whether this gives people enough due process before taking their guns. But this does seem like one of the issues that Republicans are willing to consider. You know, they're not going to probably consider something like an assault weapons ban, but these red flag laws looking at people who particularly are troubled, and you know, a lot of people would agree shouldn't have guns. It does seem to be something that Republicans are supportive of. Obviously, the Florida Republicans have supported a law in the past. Donald Trump has come out and expressed support for red flag laws at the federal level, and a lot of Republican lawmakers in Congress have expressed support for this. So this does seem like something that could get a real debate in the next legislative session.
And I think that could be key too, that, you know, President Trump has spoken about trying to urge Congress to take up some red flag laws along with expanding background checks of some quality. You know, they're sort of, you know, at this point, kind of vague commitments. But when Congress returns from the August recess, I think that may be a signal too to the Florida legislature about how far Republicans kind of nationally may be willing to go. So you may see some action based on, you know, where Trump goes with this.
Yeah, and Trump is the leader of his party. He's got a very high approval rating among Republicans. If he expends some political capital on this, it's a signal for every other Republican lawmaker, whether at the national level or the state level, that this is okay. Our president is supporting it, and so it definitely could give it some more movement if he gets behind it. Well, we're going to move on to our final segment. John, your number was a whopping 867.7 million. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, that's in dollars. And that's how much state economists this week downsized their state revenue forecast for the current year and for next year. That's a pretty significant drop in anticipated tax collections, you know, almost $900 million. And it holds up as the legislature goes forward, if it holds up. The legislature is convening in January, but that would shrink the amount of money that they would have to be able to spend on schools, healthcare, tax breaks, all those good things leading into a year when legislators have to run for reelection. Now, the state's overall budget is almost $91 billion, so that gives a little bit of context on this. But this reduction in revenue is still a big number, and it's pretty much equally divided into more than $400 million downsizing to the revenue forecast for each of this year and next year. It's pretty much attributed to a loss of corporate income tax through big refunds that have to go to businesses that's due in part to the tax cuts at the federal level, which the state piggybacks onto, and also a loss of gaming money from Native American tribes who have stopped paying now that the state's compact with them have expired. So this week's stunningly lousy stock market also was pointed to as a sign of a slowing economy that basically helped state economists rein in their revenue forecast for this year and next. But it's a big reduction in dollars going forward, and that's one of the biggest that the state has seen in a while after several years of, frankly, undramatic fluctuations when the state does its revenue forecasts, you know, every few months.
That's an important number to watch. You know, that affects everything from school funding to road construction to land conservation, affordable housing. It sounds like the lawmakers are going to be a little bit more conscious of belt tightening as they.
Yeah, absolutely. The cupboard will be bare next year when it comes to what they can spend things on.
Well, I also had a number that was in the multiple millions. Mine was $5 million, and then again, it is $5 million. That's how much Governor Ron DeSantis has agreed to raise for the Republican Party of Florida. And that's not insignificant, but it's interesting that DeSantis has put a limit, a ceiling, on how much fundraising that he will do for the Florida GOP. When he chose Sarasota State Senator Joe Gruters to be his handpicked party chairman, there was really a sense that maybe the rift that existed between the party and the governor under Rick Scott was starting to heal. And that's what Gruter said. That's what others said. But a Political Florida story this week indicates that DeSantis also is leery of giving too much control to the party and that some of those rifts remain. The story described DeSantis's relationship with Gruter's as superficial and said his relationship, the relationship between the governor's chief of staff and Susie Wiles, who is a very influential political operative in Florida who helped run DeSantis's campaign as one of Trump's top people in Florida. The relationship between her and the governor's chief of staff, somebody in the story described that as poisoned, which is really interesting because apparently Susie Wiles and DeSantis's people have been jockeying for control of the party apparatus and that they're at odds there. So, you know, you have some party intrigue that's not necessarily unusual, but it's worth pointing out that really not everyone is on the same page now as we go into a pretty important election season. If there is an outcome that they don't like, some of these stories might seem a little bit prophetic. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Gordy, Joseph Borzano, and Adam Fish. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.